All right, we are in the effective communication class, and in this next session, we want to talk about nonverbal communication. We're going to start with our hands. The Bible talks about hands. Matthew chapter 8, when Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I'm willing," he said, "be clean." Immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. Now, what you may not understand is that leprosy, at least in those days, was thought of as a contagious disease. So you didn't want to touch lepers. There were leper colonies outside the city. If you had leprosy, you had to go to that place. So here's a man that's outside of that place, and he's pleading with Jesus to heal him. Now, Jesus could have healed him from a distance. He could have said, "Okay, you have leprosy, I'm going to heal you." And then go over and give the man a hug. But what does Jesus do? And I think he did it deliberately. Jesus goes over to him and reached out and he touches the man. And then he heals him. Now you got to imagine that this man has not been touched by another human being for years. And so Jesus wanted to reach out. He wanted to touch him. "I'm going to touch you as you are. Because even though you have leprosy, you're still a human being and I care for you." And then he heals him. It's very powerful, very dramatic. All right, Luke chapter 15, verse 20. This is the story of the prodigal son, where the younger son runs off, takes his father's money, gets into trouble, finally comes to his senses. But notice, if you read this passage, he finally comes to his senses. And the first thing he says is, "I'm hungry. Back home, even the servants have enough food. But I can't just go back. I have to confess." So he rehearses this confession. "Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm not worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants." That's what he rehearses. So he's going to go back. And this is what happens. Luke 15:20. "So when he got up and went to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him." Now the father does this before the son says his apology. The father's love is unconditional. It's not dependent on his confession. Now if you read the text, you'll find that the son does confess. He says, "Father, I'm not worthy to be called your son." But he doesn't say, "Make me one of your hired servants." And the reason he doesn't say that is because his father just threw his arms around him. Put a ring on his finger. He accepted him back as a son. There was no reason to say it. And so the son, by that embrace, is forgiven. He's forgiven before he even asks for forgiveness. That's how powerful arms can be, hands can be. The Passion Week. This is really fascinating to me. I remember one of my professors, I went to a jail cell with him. It was all the prisoners were there. And he went through the Passion Week, the last week of Jesus. And he went through the week just talking about hands. The whole thing was about hands and how we embrace with hands, we shake hands, we hold hands, we use our hands to direct people, all the different ways that we use our hands. And then he told the story of Jesus with hands. Luke 22, verse 4. "When Judas went to the chief priests and the officers of the temple guard and discussed with them how he might betray Jesus, they were delighted and agreed to give him money. He consented and watched for his opportunity to hand Jesus over to them when no crowd was present." Being betrayed. Matthew 26. "When evening came, Jesus was reclining at the table with the 12. And while they were eating, he said, 'I tell you the truth, one of you will betray me.' They were very sad and began to say to him one after the other, 'Surely not I, Lord.' And Jesus replied, the one who has dipped his hand into the bowl with me will betray me. Judas. Matthew 27. When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. I am innocent of this man's blood, he said. It is your responsibility. Then they released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. Luke 23. It was about the sixth hour, and darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour, for the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out in a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. When he had said this, he breathed his last. Interesting, isn't it? The whole story is told with the use of hands. Hands communicate so many things. I want to look at some hand gestures. Sometimes we make our points and we have our hands close to us. You know, you're talking and your hands are like this. Sometimes you're making gestures and they're all very close to you. And it feels closed off. You're not being expressive. A lot of times people will think they're making these wild gestures, but really they're like this. People can hardly see them. Or you have your arms outstretched. It's very welcoming. Come unto me, all you who are labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. I can picture Jesus with his hands wide out. Let the children come to me, Jesus said. He wouldn't be let the children come to me. He'd have his hands out there. So you're closed off, you're open. Little or big. You can make your little tiny gestures here and there, or you can make big gestures. You can be closed, or you can be open. You can hold your hands tight, or you can push people away. You can bring people to you with your hands. You can push them away. You can have a lot of emotion with your hands, or you can be very stoic. Put your hands in your pocket. You can let your hands express what you're saying, or you can just have them in your pocket. And it means I don't have a lot of emotion going. Eyes, Acts 14. In Lystra there sat a man who was lame. He had been that way from birth and never walked. He listened to Paul as he was speaking. Paul looked directly at him, saw that he had faith to be healed, and called out, stand on your feet. At that, the man jumped up and began to walk. Your eyes can be closed. And when they're closed, it's like you're contemplating something, or you're thinking hard about something, or you're trying to figure out what to say. And sometimes that can be very dramatic. You're talking and then you're trying to figure out what it is. And everyone in the crowd is trying to figure it out too. You're taking them on this journey. And you're like, you know, I visited this person. And this person looked at me in the hospital. And this person looked at me and he said, am I going to die? And before I answered him, and you can just close your eyes. It's like, I really want to say the right things. You're thinking about it. Or your eyes can be open. You can look up. You know, a lot of times when you're talking to God, you look up. Now, is God up? God is everywhere. But it lets everyone know that you're talking to God. Or you can have your eyes down. A lot of times I like to look down before I say something dramatic. I'm talking about, you know, some passage in the scripture, and then I want to make a point to somebody. And finally, when I want to make the point, I look up. I'm looking down, I'm talking, I'm thinking, but now I want to say something to you. And when you have this down, and then that the contrast between looking down and looking directly right at the person, right at the camera, I'm going to say something really important, and you must listen to it. You can have your eyes wide open, surprise, wonder, or they can be half shut. Half shut means I'm thinking about something. half shut is I'm not quite sure. There's something going on when your eyes are half shut. Away, you can look away. You can look direct. I was talking about that earlier. A lot of times when I'm talking, see, I just look down a little bit. I'm thinking, what am I going to say? And I'm not to the dramatic part. But when I get to the dramatic part, I want to look at you. Always when you get to the dramatic part, you want to look directly at people. And let's say you have a crowd. I only have one eye looking at me. It's the camera. So I know exactly where to look. But if I had a crowd of people, I have 100 eyes. So I have to spend time looking at people. You can just sort of blur and see a crowd, or you can see that individual in the third row. I look directly at them. They'll almost be embarrassed because I'm looking directly at them. I'm looking directly at her. And if you do that enough times, people will feel like you're talking to them. Face. Proverbs 27, verse 19. As water reflects the face, so one's life reflects the heart. So your face also often can reflect your heart. Your face is often a window to what's inside. You can smile. As I've observed a lot of pastors just don't smile. They're always serious. You know, we're going to look at Paul today, and Paul has these things that he wants to tell us in the book of Ephesians. And the Ephesians, and we talk about Ephesus and where it is and what was going on in that city. It was the city of one of the seven wonders of the world, Aphrodite. All that's left right today, if you go there, is one pillar, but it was one of the seven wonders. You know, so I'm giving you all these facts. And then I want to tell you that like the people in Ephesus, we have to resist the culture. And, you know, we have all these serious things that we want to talk about. And sometimes a pastor will preach for a half an hour and he's never smiled once. And it's like this, we have to live a certain way. As Christians, we have to be vigilant. And we have this battle and we have this fight. And it's the fight of faith. And everything is this. Like we're in the army and it's going to be tough. And it is. All those things are true. But there's joy too. A lot of times when I walk up to the pulpit, the first thing I do is I look at the people. I look at the people and I just smile. And you know what I'm trying to communicate? I'm trying to communicate to the people, isn't it great just to be here together at church? Isn't it just wonderful to... I mean, we've had a week, we've been busy doing things, and here we are together. Isn't it awesome just to be here together? Now, we have some things to do. We're going to look at some passages. We've got some serious work to do. We have to think. We have to apply. But isn't it great to be here together? I mean, communicate a little bit of that. It is great to be here together. It is good to be with families and their children and singing and giving praise to God. It is just awesome to be here. So we need to communicate that with our faith. But it's not all smiles. Sometimes it is frowns. Sometimes it is hard. Sometimes it is sad. Emotions. Your face probably more than anything else will communicate emotions. Anger. And sometimes anger is appropriate. We need to get angry at things. I wrote a book. I showed it to you earlier. And being a lifeboat church in a Titanic cruise ship world, on the back, I wrote about lifeboat number one. And it goes like this. When the Titanic went down, lifeboat number one was only a couple hundred yards away. There was plenty of room for more passengers. 28 empty seats in a boat that could hold 40. So that means there were only 12 people in this lifeboat. Fireman Charles Hendrickson said, "It's up to us to go back and pick up anyone in the water." No one said a word. Finally, Sir Cosmo Duff Gordon announced that they shouldn't go back. Too dangerous. And with these few words, the matter was dropped. And lifeboat number one rowed away from 1,500 desperate drowning men, women, and children. Then I write on the back here, This one event raises the most puzzling, unanswerable questions of the whole Titanic tragedy. How could a lifeboat, with more empty seats than filled, row away from people who are drowning? I get angry when I think about these people in lifeboat number one. Don't you? I wish I was there, alive, so I could demand an explanation. Why? How could you possibly row back? Then I realize they are alive. They sit with an empty seat next to them in church every Sunday, and I sometimes sit with them too, because there's an empty seat sitting next to me. So there are things we should get angry about. Angry about how people are lost to God forever and we don't do anything about it. So anger is an appropriate emotion sometimes, and you need to demonstrate it. What are you angry about? What upsets you in our culture? Let your people, let the audience know. Joy, of course. Peace, tension, warmth. All these emotions, we need to express them, and you do them with your face. You can see it on my face. Disapproval. You know, I disapprove of that. You can see it on your mother's face when she disapproves of what you're doing. Compassion. You can see a warmth in someone's face when their heart goes out to somebody. Or quizzical. It's like, I don't quite understand that. I don't understand what you're saying. You see, you know, I'm saying these words, but my face is communicating it as well. Or determination. You know, I'm determined. I'm going to make this happen. Your face helps sell how determined you are, or guarded, or fearful. All these expressions. And the way to work on it is to go to the mirror. You know, if you have a speech that you must do, look right into the mirror and give your speech, and you will see what your face is doing or not doing. You'll see what your hands are doing, what your body is doing. You think you're going like this, but you're going like this. You think you're smiling when you're just barely, you know, it's not much of a smile. So watch and start using your face more to communicate the words that you're saying. Head position. You know, if I lean in, you know, it's time to really listen. Or if I step back, you know, I'm creating a little bit of distance. So sometimes it's the contrast. I'm stepping back, but then when I want to make a real point, I come in. And I'm looking right at you. I'm really close. And then when I'm, you know, okay, we have a little distance, a little safe, you know, I'm giving you a little space to think about things, I step back. Voice. 1 Kings 19. The Lord said to Elijah, Elijah runs away and he goes back to the mountain of God. And the Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. Use your voice. A lot of times, preachers especially, they can get into this monotone pattern where they keep the same volume. It doesn't matter what they're talking about. The volume is the same. Well, beloved, we have come here today and we're going to read Psalm 23 and we're going to talk about this for a while. And then we're going to, you know, and you need variety, and you need to be, the variety has to be appropriate. You don't just make a lot of noise because you're making noise. And you're not just soft because you want to be soft. It has to be appropriate. There has to be a reason why you're raising your voice. There has to be a reason why you soften your voice. A lot of pastors are really predictable. They start out soft, then they start getting really loud, and at the end you can tell their message is getting to a close because they start winding down. And people, that's what we have to do. We have to be more like Jesus in our lives and with our families and with the people around us, because that's what He's called us to do. You know, and you can just tell that we're going to end now. Okay, you don't want to be predictable. You want to be loud when it's appropriate. You want to be soft when it's appropriate. But mix it up. You can speak high. You know, the more excited you get, the higher the voice usually goes. A lot of times the quieter you get, the more deliberate you get, the more your voice goes lower. It's all, these things come natural in some ways to us, but you have to, you know, my best advice is you should listen to yourself, record it, and listen back and see if you make much of a variation at all in your voice. A lot of times you'll figure out that you really don't. Fast and slow. You know, instead of have the same pace, the words, the exact... No, sometimes you really have to say a lot of things. I want to talk about this with you. Some of you need to start getting organized with your life. You're just sitting on the couch. You got to get off the couch. You got to get out there and do something. Okay? And I'm trying to motivate you. I'm trying to get you going. I'm trying to get your engine started here. And I'm not going to get your engine started by talking really, really slow. I think you got to go to work and you got to work hard and you got to do, you know, it's like I'm going to put you to sleep before you even get to work. Sometimes talking really slow is important. The one thing that every person needs in their life is Jesus. Okay? So I want to make a really important point. I want you to hear this point. There's nothing more important. I may slow the whole thing down because I don't want you to miss a single word. Okay? So, speeding up words, appropriate when it's needed. Slowing down words has its own use. Matching words and emotion versus a habitual pattern. A lot of professional speakers get into a pattern. You know, I went to the store and then I went back home. And then I did this and then I did that. And then people, beloved, we need to go, you know. And they have this sing-songy thing where they kind of, it's almost like the waves are coming in and then the waves crash on the beach. And then the waves build up and the waves, and it's like, it doesn't matter what we're saying. It doesn't matter what the verse is. The Lord Himself goes before you and He will be with you. He always, you know, and you're up and down and up and down. And people stop listening because your ups and downs have nothing to do with the words that you're saying. It's just a pattern that you get into. And it doesn't matter what words you are saying. They just sort of come in the pattern. And so it doesn't add anything. The emotion that you feel has to fit the words that you speak. If you're talking about a really sad scripture verse, then reflect that with how you're saying it. If it's a really, you know, Paul is saying, fight the good fight of faith, then you would say it with that kind of cadence. You would say it with a fight in your voice. If you're talking about comfort, you would say it with comfort in your voice. Make what you say appropriate. And watch for the patterns, these sing-songy patterns that you just get into. A lot of people especially have that when they read. They start reading from the Bible, and instead of really knowing the passage that they're talking about, instead of really working at it and trying to make people see, you know, what you're reading. You know, if you're reading a story in the Old Testament, instead of just reading it, and you have no idea what the next sentence is going to be, you know ahead of time. You know this is where you want to be dramatic. You know this is where you're going to act it out. This is where you're going to step out. This is where you're going to boldly do something because it reflects the passage. Instead, you get into these sing-songy patterns. And there's nothing that bores people more than that, where when your voice doesn't match what you're saying. Emotions. Anger, care, determination, encouragement, all these things can be reflected in your voice. You can hear it. In normal conversations, you can hear in a person's voice what they're trying to do. Your body. Luke chapter 18. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray. One a Pharisee, religious person, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed. You can picture this. God, I thank you that I am not like other people. Robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like that tax collector over there, hobbling in the corner. So, what's this Pharisee doing? He's standing up tall. He's standing up proud. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. So he's over here. He's standing at a distance. He's not standing at center stage. He's over there in the corner. He would not even look up to heaven. His head is down. And he beats his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you the truth, said Jesus, this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Okay, as you tell this story, your body has to communicate the arrogance. I'm glad I'm not like other men, especially like that guy over there hobbling in the corner, and the guy in the corner is beating his breast. I'm just a sinner. Now, what happens in church? We know this story. In church, what are church people doing as you're telling this story? You know what they're doing? They're in their minds somewhere, standing up in the middle of church, going, "I am so glad I am not like that Pharisee. I'm glad I'm like the humble publican, the humble tax collector hobbling in the corner saying, I am such a sinner." And you know what we end up doing? We end up out-Phariseeing the Pharisee. But you can communicate all that with your body. You can stand. A lot of times we're standing. But you know, it's sometimes dramatic just to get down on one knee. You're giving a speech and all of a sudden you get on your knee. Or even more dramatic is you get down on your face. Sometimes we should get down on our face before God. I mean, what if I did that? What if I said, you know, at some point I just went down on my face and said, Lord, I'm so worthless. I'm such a sinner. I don't deserve to be talking to these people. You see, people would be listening. It would communicate more of what you're saying than, you know, I'm sometimes I feel down, sometimes I feel like a sinner, sometimes I don't feel worthy of. Demonstrate what you're saying with your body. Your body can be far, you know, I'm talking in general, but I want to make a point, and I come in. And I'm dramatically looking, and I'm getting closer to you. And I'm invading your space. And that's what we're doing. Okay, now I'm giving you space. But now I'm invading your space. And I want to invade your space because I have this to say to you. And I want you to listen. Okay? So sometimes that's appropriate. Now if I spent the whole time invading your space, I'm in your face, I'm giving you all the... Eventually you're going to back away. So there are some pastors and speakers who are like that. They're like bulldogs and they're like punching, 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 and people are like backing up. You can only get in there so often, then you give the people a little rest and you step back. To the front, I can talk to you like this, but you know, sometimes I can go this way. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do anymore. You see? I don't have to always be looking at you. I can communicate something by looking away. I'm frustrated. And your body tells you that. Walking. I like to walk. When I preach, I like to walk. When I speak, that's why here at the Christian Leaders Institute, we have this wonderful studio. Wally De La Fonte is doing an incredible job. He makes it so that I can go over here. And he follows. And I can stand over here. And I can go over here. And I can sit on this chair. And I can say, you know, yeah, life is good. And I can say something from here because this is what I feel right now. Or I can come over here. And I can sit down. and we can discuss things. Hey, welcome to my living room. Let's talk about God, shall we? See, we have a different feel because I'm sitting. You're there. It's like I'm inviting you into my living room. We have a nice chat together. What should we talk about? How's your studies going? Are you keeping up with your studies? I know it's hard. You know, there's no one pushing you, no one's shoving you. And yet you do it. Here you are, listening to this next lecture, and you're trying to take some notes. And you have to take a quiz at the end. I know. And you have a lot more to do. But you're on a mission. You have a goal. And you're building something. And God is working something. You see, we're here together. And the fact that I'm sitting here, and I'm relaxed, you're relaxed. I'm relaxed, you're relaxed. We're having this little conversation. It's almost as if I know you and that you know me. Maybe you're on the other side of the world and here we are. You're in Africa, I'm here in Michigan in the United States, and we're sitting around the same table. Isn't it wonderful? But your body communicates some of this, the setting that you find yourself in. So use the appropriate setting for what you're trying to do. Walking, stationary. You don't always have to be walking. Sometimes it's very appropriate to just stand here. I can stand here and just talk. Life is good. Serving God is good. Sharing this video with you is good. What a blessed thing that God has called me to do. What an opportunity. God has given me some things and I get to give these things to you. And guess what? You get to give them to someone else. Wow, what a blessing. And I can just do that standing here. So, just to sum up, use your voice, use your hands, use your face, use your body, use all that you are, that all the nonverbal cues that communicate all that you're trying to say.